It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
Wall Street has never had a reputation for impeccable behavior. Headlines and pop culture often show a cutthroat industry with toxicity bubbling right beneath the surface. But Citigroup appeared to be different. In 2021, the bank promoted Jane Fraser to CEO, making her the first female CEO of any major Wall Street bank. And the company touted a concerted effort to prioritize diversity and inclusion. But in November of last year, a managing director at the bank named Ardith Lindsay filed a lawsuit accusing Citigroup of harassment and discrimination.
The managing director painted this sort of picture of just an extremely dysfunctional workplace, sort of rife with discrimination and sexual harassment and drug use that she says persisted over a number of years.
My Bloomberg colleague Paige Smith covered the lawsuit in November and then kept digging. She worked with finance reporter Max Abelson, who's covered Wall Street for years. And together, they uncovered a much bigger story about problems in Citigroup's equities division and the finance industry's long path to reckoning with how it treats women.
The story is a reminder that questions about gender and behavior are not abstract at all. And the question of corporations and what they owe their employees is a very real thing with real consequences.
Today on the show, we go inside Citigroup and explore what behavior within this one unit reveals about just how far Wall Street still has to go. This is The Big Take from Bloomberg News. I'm Sarah Holder. In November of 2023, Citigroup executive Ardith Lindsay filed a lawsuit against the bank, accusing it of tolerating a culture of harassment and discrimination in its equities unit. Citigroup has said it will defend itself against her claims. But for Bloomberg reporter Paige Smith, the legal filing opened a rare window into part of Citigroup's culture. She wanted to pry it all the way open. So, Paige, where did the reporting process take you next? What other questions did you want to ask?
I think the thing that we really wanted to uncover with this piece was understanding that the lawsuit was one person's experience within the equities division, but we really wanted to learn more about how widespread the alleged behavior was, how many people had experienced it, over what period of time, what kinds of experiences maybe extended beyond those described in the lawsuit. So our reporting sort of brought us to these interviews with these many, many people who worked in or closely with the equities division over a long period of time.
Can you describe any more of the specific allegations that were unearthed in these conversations?
One instance that is one depiction of some of the dysfunction that we uncovered in our reporting was a client party at a sort of buzzy downtown club restaurant called Catch in May 2018, where there were rappers performing, there were Citigroup employees there were clients there, and there were also two people linked to the equities division there, a young two-year rotator and her roommate. And at the time, the night sort of progressed, and one of the unit's bosses actually came up and started sort of grinding his crotch against the young two-year rotator's roommate.
That's according to two people present who said they saw the incident.
It was an instance that sort of stuck out to us as just showing that this behavior was not just tolerated, but witnessed by a number of people within the division. And it was not just a standalone incident, but kind of a pattern of harassment.
And what I find impressive about Paige's reporting is that it doesn't just stop there. She also has that rotator going on to be told to wear higher heels to work and to wear shorter skirts. And I think that there was a male trader who kept asking about her love life. Page's work depicts not just these individual instances, but a pattern of a unit where all was not well.
What is the culture of an equities division generally?
Well, you know, Wall Street, like any high-stakes corporate environment, is never perfect. When there's a lot of money to be made or to be lost, I think it's completely normal to expect a certain level of intensity and competitiveness. But we're not talking about pedestrian, banal competitiveness. We're talking about people who were using cocaine, and not just after hours, but at work. One person had to tell another to wipe the white residue beneath their nose, you know, inside the Manhattan headquarters. And it's also, you know, it's not a matter of like policing other people's drug use. There's also a pattern that she found of men rating their female colleagues, including very, very young ones, by their looks, and ogling that and staring at their bodies as they walk by. I think that if it's fair to expect a certain level of intensity and competitiveness, that's certainly fair, but it's also fair to expect that at some of the biggest companies in the world, like, people shouldn't be objectified and be stared at and sort of face sort of an unusual degree of drug use, like on a random day.
Absolutely. But what did Citi say about some of the specific allegations that you raise?
A Citi spokesperson did respond to many of our questions, and one of the responses that we received was that while several of the alleged incidents would have violated the bank's code of conduct, you know, some of them did not receive a complaint, or others were old, or others complained allegations that the bank said were perhaps too vague or involved people who had left the firm. So we did get some sort of specific responses to individual incidents that we asked for comment on, but others were sort of not commented on by the bank.
In Citigroup's response to Bloomberg, a spokesperson said in part, quote, Citi's values and expectations are clear. No one should ever be discriminated against or harassed in the workplace. He continued, quote, while we will not comment on individual internal matters, simply put, where warranted, we exit employees who fail to meet our high standards of respectful treatment in our workplace.
What he told us is that the attempts to like be inclusive and to be equitable don't stop, and that the spokesperson called it a continuous and proactive process. I was interested by that. You rarely hear Wall Street banks say, like, you know, we're trying to make things better. And it's not necessarily making any concessions. In fact, I think it's fair to say Citigroup did not concede to any of our reporting. But I think that the reality is, no matter what industry we're talking about, it's not easy to have thousands of employees, and it's not easy to change a culture. And chauvinism and misogyny, no industry has a monopoly on those things.
I want to talk a little bit more about Citi versus all these other banks, or in the context of these other banks. Before this story, how did you guys think about Citi in terms of its culture and in terms of its progress on dealing with some of these issues?
You know, Citigroup has cultivated an image of inclusivity, and, you know, they've also had some pretty impressive benchmarks. In my reporting on race, and especially Black executives and Black staffers at the big banks, Citigroup's numbers have been awfully impressive, and not just in a short time span. I think it's fair to say that over really several years now, they have been ahead of the pack of Wall Street when it comes to racial inclusion. On the other hand, you know, what we've seen is a bank that, while we were finishing our reporting, they put someone on leave because of a verbal altercation and told investment bankers, like, not to embarrass the firm when it comes to drinking. So it's a bank that has made strides for sure, but I think it's fair to say, what's a good phrase? Inconsistent culture, something like that?
I would say inconsistent is very accurate, and also just these things don't exist in a vacuum, right? You can make strides in hiring and representation, but also have a workplace that is very toxic, and toxic enough actually to cause people to leave because they feel their complaints are not heard. I think it's also worth noting that Citigroup is one of the largest U.S. banks, obviously, but also has a female CEO who was appointed in 2021, the only of the largest U.S. banks to have a female CEO. And it's also made significant efforts and set pretty intense goals for itself in terms of pay equity and hiring goals and representation in the workplace. But at the same time, these patterns of harassment were occurring, and the equity division specifically within Citigroup was a business that lagged peers on Wall Street for many, many years in terms of revenue and rankings, and continues to lag peers, in fact.
In a big picture, Citi has never really gotten things right compared to rivals. You know, their share price, it's in a different ballpark than Goldman Sachs's and Morgan Stanley, JP Morgan's of the world. And then when it comes to not just Citigroup as a global institution, but the equities business in particular, they've gone up and down. They had a hot streak. Then there was like a what we call a fat finger trade that reminds me of Homer Simpson and one of my favorite episodes of The Simpsons when I hear the phrase fat finger. But it just means that there was a mistake and not a small mistake, but a big mistake that had large ramifications. And you don't want that to happen because it does not reflect well on the unit. And if it happens at a large enough scale, it doesn't reflect well on the CEO either. The equities team has lagged rivals. They've really tried to figure it out. And I one reason that I've enjoyed working on this story with Paige is that it's not just about culture. It's also about underperformance, too.
Well, I mean, you mentioned some of these issues with a bad trade, profitability issues. Has this toxic culture that you'd identified contributed to these broader business problems at the bank?
The only thing I would add is that the reason you don't want bad behavior inside of a company isn't just out of morality and ethics, although you know, morals matter too. It's also because like it's alienating. You don't want to have to
go. It's distracting.
It's distracting. And I think that if you see bad behavior and then you complain about it and nothing happens, you end up leaving or just disliking your job. And in fact, we have met several people, right, Paige, who ended up leaving.
And especially if it's happening with rotators or people young in the industry, if that's your first experience in the banking world, I'm assuming you're not going to continue, at least not there.
Definitely. And we also had some reporting even before this story was published that showed that as you sort of continue up the corporate ladder, there are just not as many women represented in kind of the upper echelons.
After the break, what does this pattern of behavior at Citi reveal about the rest of Wall Street, 6 years after Me Too?
Join us in Chicago or virtually on May 2nd for Bloomberg's Business Value of AI event and networking reception. This event will gather business and technology executives to share their experiences and provide insights into their strategies for deploying AI that achieves a desirable ROI. You'll also learn how companies have successfully implemented AI solutions that have improved productivity and profitability. This program is proudly sponsored by IBM. Register at BloombergLive.com/AI/radio.
I want to take a second to talk about the banking industry broadly and the way that these allegations that you've unearthed fit into this broader pattern. Max, you wrote a story back in 2018 called Why Wall Street Hasn't Had Its Me Too Moment Yet. Why were big banks insulated from the reckoning that was rippling across industries at that time, especially?
Well, if you want to go back not just a couple of years, but like decades, Wall Street really was a bifurcated industry. There were essentially either no women or very, very few women at the top of Wall Street for a really long time. I think that a firm like Goldman Sachs didn't have a female partner until my lifetime. And I'm old, but I'm not that old. So we're talking the 1980s. Then in the 1990s, there were some really famous lawsuits that revealed and alleged sort of a cinematic bad behavior, the kind of things that make it into movies like The Wolf of Wall Street, but happening at big firms. So by the time the Me Too movement rolled around, I think there was an expectation among women and men on Wall Street that the world would sort of be hearing about what happened behind closed doors. And what we've reported on over the last few years is the way that cultural and financial and legal forces have kept a lot of allegations of bad behavior quiet. So, for example, you have a kind of alternate system called arbitration, which definitely applies to all sorts of corporations, including the media. But Wall Street has been at the forefront of using forced arbitration, which is a way of saying to someone who has signed a contract, if something bad happens, you are not going to be taking it before a judge. You're going to be going in this quieter, kind of more shadowy system that's essentially kind of like a privatized version of justice. And that has happened a lot on Wall Street.
So if you are a worker in any workplace and you signed any sort of arbitration agreement on your first day of work, you essentially waive your right to appear in an open court and disagree with your employer about what happened. Wall Street has very frequently turned to these sort of nasty tools to quiet workers.
Although it has begun to change. I think Paige and I have maybe one of our first pieces of reporting together was about federal legislation that changes harassment laws so that you don't have to go into arbitration.
Arbitration agreements now are not binding for workers who signed them on their first days. So workers who do come forward with allegations like the ones Ardith Lindsay outlined in her lawsuit against Citigroup, they can appear in an open court and disagree with their employer about what happened.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like this is an example of being able to make public these allegations, which then allowed more people to come forward and speak to you. Though you've spoken with 22 people, but none of them would go on the record. What did you make of that, given what's changed over the past few years?
I would say that things have certainly changed over the past few years. And of course, Ardith Lindsay's lawsuit in particular does change things in this particular division at this particular bank. But I think that people are still very scared to share their experiences publicly or on the record. Either they're still in the industry or they are fearful of what sort of retaliation might come down the line. I think people think of Wall Street as being this giant, you know, conglomerate of big banks with thousands of employees. A common theme that I heard was that it is still quite small and people do hear about things. So I think that that was certainly a concern.
And Paige's reporting shows that people do not necessarily have a good experience when they speak up. This story has some really key details about talking to HR and talking to senior executives and sharing things that happened. And then I think there's like a half a dozen people in this story who felt really dissatisfied that there was a lack of change after they spoke up. And so I feel like I can sympathize really with why, you know, one might think, well, if I go public with a journalist, that's not going to end any better than my previous attempts.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, I mean, as you were doing reporting on this, especially since 2018, does it feel like Wall Street's Me Too moment has finally come?
No, I don't. I don't. I think that to watch what happened with Harvey Weinstein and with Hollywood was to see an industry whose mores were completely turned on their head. I think you might be able to say the same about politics, other kinds of entertainment. But Wall Street, by and large, I don't think you can say that anyone who has accumulated vast power the way that Weinstein did has been outed and publicly revealed the way that he had been. Wall Street is a place where things go wrong and things go right. But by and large, we see the same executives and the same companies accumulate and keep power. And I would say that in order to qualify as like a vast Me Too moment, that would mean change. And I'm not so sure we've seen dramatic change.
This is The Big Take from Bloomberg News. I'm Sarah Holder. This episode was produced by Julia Press. It was edited by Aaron Edwards and Sally Bakewell. It was mixed by Alex Sugiura. It was fact-checked by Thomas Liu. Our senior producers are Naomi Shaven and Elizabeth Ponso. Nicole Beemsterboer is our executive producer. Sage Bauman is our head of podcasts. Thanks for listening. Please follow and review The Big Take wherever you listen to podcasts. It helps new listeners find the show. We'll be back tomorrow.
Osage County, Oklahoma is getting a lot of attention right now. It's the setting of Martin Scorsese's latest film, Killers of the Flower Moon. The movie is based on a book about the 1920s Osage murders, when white men poured into Osage County and killed Osage people for their oil wealth. I'm Rachel Adams Heard, the host of In Trust, a podcast from Bloomberg and iHeartMedia. For over a year, I was reporting a different story about other ways white people got Osage land and wealth, and how a prominent ranching family in Osage County became one of the biggest landowners here. Their ranching empire was built on land that at the turn of the century was all owned by the Osage Nation. So how'd they get it? Listen to the award-winning podcast, In Trust, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.